You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It's Wednesday, time to talk Michigan's history.
If our cities go down, in my opinion, our nation will go down.
You have to think about your dream and what you want to do.
All we were trying to do was just get music for all people.
30 years ago this week, January 5th, 1988, the last train left Michigan Central Station, and that moment marked the end of nearly 75 years of people catching trains at the once proud station. Dan Austin is with us. He's written three books about Detroit history, and he is the founder of HistoricDetroit.org. And we also welcome Mark Harvey, the state archivist, here with us from the Michigan History Center. Happy New Year to both of you.
Happy New Year.
Same to you.
I remember Michigan Central. Actually, I had a great uncle who spent his career working in that building. I remember that final train 30 years ago. But boy, there are a lot of people who never knew it as anything but that big, hulking, empty, sad building between Corktown and Mexicantown. Dan, describe Michigan Central in its heyday and what it meant to Southeast Michigan.
Well, when the building opened, it opened as the tallest rail station in the world. So if you could imagine Detroit with the advent of the automobile, or the automobile really coming into its prime, Detroit was poised for greatness, and few things made a first impression on people as the first building they saw when they stepped off the train. So Michigan Central was a grand building showing a city on the rise. It was decked to the nines. It was designed by the same two firms that did Grand Central Station in New York. So it's kind of got like this Beaux-Arts outside. The waiting room is done up like the old baths of ancient Rome with a 65-foot ceiling. I mean, this building made an impression on people, not just of the station, but of the city itself.
So it's basically throwing down that card on the table saying, we're terrific.
Yeah, Detroit is such an amazing city. Check out our Temple of Transportation, as you will. You know, it was really an incredible way to kind of roll out the welcome mat, not just to people traveling, visitors, to people arriving in Detroit to work in the auto factories. I mean, it was really a grand statement of what the Motor City had become and would continue to grow into.
Mark Harvey, the station's about a mile or so west of the heart of downtown Detroit. Do we know why that location of Michigan Avenue and 14th Street was chosen?
We have some clues to it. The original station was located at 3rd and Jefferson, and Michigan Central Railroad was a growing business around the turn of the century, growing rapidly. In 1906, they started construction on a tunnel to connect with Canada. And as Dan said, Detroit was booming. And so the thought was, as the city expands, the idea was planted to locate that new station, that Temple of Transportation, as I think Dan accurately pointed out, about 3/4 of a mile west, to encourage that outward growth.
So, Dan, when did construction start, and how long did it take to build this grand temple?
So a building of this size took a few years. You know, it's not something you whip out overnight. So the construction began in 1910, and it wasn't until 1912 that we had the steel framework for this building up. And then, as Mark noted, the old station, which was downtown, burned on December 26, 1913. So they had to rush the new station into service early. It was supposed to open up the following month. The newspaper articles at the time said, you know, as they were extinguishing the last of the flames at the old depot, the first of the new trains were coming into the station, which is really pretty incredible when you think about it.
It is.
You know, it's that the Detroit can do, nothing stops Detroit kind of mentality.
So after that rough start, how did things go for the Michigan Central Station in its first few decades?
At first, things were great. I mean, again, the station opened in 1913. 1914, that World War I era, was the peak of rail travel in the United States. Yes, cars were there, but there weren't freeways. You know, the only other way to get around the Midwest was on these majestic Great Lakes steamers. So trains were really your only way to go. So, I mean, you had 200 trains a day leaving Michigan Central around World War I. I mean, you're talking about thousands of passengers coming in and out of the station every day. And it stayed good up until, you know, the 1950s. You had the freeway system come in that really cost the station a lot of its travelers. And then by 1971, you know, the federal government stepped in and created Amtrak because the for-profit rail companies were no longer profitable, or they had gone out of business. And then you had the oil crisis in the early 70s, which kept that going for a while, but it was only a matter of time before the American rail system kind of declined.
So the years marched on, and even, am I right, Mark, that Amtrak took control of the station in 71 and did some renovations?
Yeah, they tried to pump some new life into the station, and Amtrak in the 70s reopened the ornate waiting room, but there was no connection to the airport. It was still sitting west of downtown, and with the rise of automobiles, even with the energy crisis, it was disconnected, and I think it was just an inevitability that it was going to slowly peter out.
Kind of withering on the vine. Dan Austin, did anything special mark that last train, January 5th, 1988?
Not really. You know, the newspapers at the time covered it, television stations, whatever, but it was an old relic of an older era, you know, bygone era, and it had been declined for so long. By 88, that was in the past, and it was just kind of on the outskirts, this giant hulking building. You know, Beaux-Arts behemoth that had already been kind of grimy and run down. So people just kind of said, you know, see you later. And keep in mind, Detroit was also still in the decline. I mean, the 80s were not a great time for Detroit. It was losing population, the Devil's Night fires, crime. So it was just one of those things where, like so much of the city, we just turned our backs on it and walked away.
Except for the scavengers and the scrappers, because certainly now they've had decades to hurt the building.
Yeah, it was not long after the station closed that the scrappers got to work and just ripped it apart. You saw sconces being stolen, chandeliers, marble. Vandals got in and spray-painted graffiti everywhere. It really was an undignified way to end what had been this grandiose building and such a symbol of pride. It quickly became a symbol of Detroit's decay. You know, I mean, I don't think that there's been a building other than maybe the Packard plant, but even that's questionable, that has been used to illustrate Detroit's decline as much as Michigan Central. I mean, even when you're looking at these movies like Transformers and Batman versus Superman, you know, when they want to show this war-torn, destroyed kind of building, they always go to Michigan Central Station.
When you talk about ruin porn, which is a phrase many people despise, but that kind of epitomizes it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I think it's also important to note here, you know, I know that the Maroon family, which owns it, and the Ambassador Bridge, takes a lot of heat for the station's condition, but they bought it in 1995, and the scrappers and vandals had already had their go at it by the time. Now, clearly, he didn't do a whole lot to stabilize it and prevent further decay until more recent years, working with Mayor Duggan. But, I mean, this building had been, you know, open to trespass and vandals for 7 years by the time the Maroons got their hands on it.
And here we are in 2017, where we see a younger generation who aren't particularly interested in cars, who would welcome a good train station. And there have been ideas for ways to use Michigan Central through the years. Dan, what have been the sticking points?
Money. I mean, it all comes down to money. You know, you're looking at a building that is so big. I mean, it's 18 stories tall. The waiting room would take probably $100 million on its own. I mean, you got stone missing, marble missing. I mean, I'm not an architect or a construction engineer, but you know, probably $250 to $300 million. And it's just really hard to make that money work. And I think that there are some things that are going in the building's favor these days, unlike the previous 30 years, such as you have a lot of investment and restoration of historic buildings in downtown Detroit. We're seeing buildings that we never thought would be open, buildings that had closed before I was born, now being restored. That certainly helps. When you look at 09, when the Detroit City Council passed a resolution to use economic stimulus money to tear it down, which fortunately they were unable to do because of its placement on the National Register of Historic Places, things have changed a lot. I mean, in the past 9 years, things have finally swung in his favor, but unfortunately, that price tag is still going to be a big hill to overcome.
We were all having kind of a discussion on New Year's Day about the question, right now, as we talk in 2018, is the building structurally sound? Could it be put to good use, or has it been too long and now it's too damaged?
I think that it's still salvageable. Any building, if you're willing to throw money at it, is salvageable. Granted, I'm a preservationist, I'm a building hugger, but I can't think of anyone who wouldn't want to see this building saved. I mean, if Detroit can turn around this symbol of its decay and turn it into a symbol of its rebirth, I mean, that would just be such a story for Detroit. I mean, we have, you know, finally overcome and we have reclaimed our rightful placement as one of America's greatest cities.
let me ask you, Mark Harvey, as a Michigan History Center perspective, in your gut, do you believe we will see a new chapter and a new life for Michigan Central?
I hope so. I think an interesting postscript to this is about 4 years ago, the Archives of Michigan was contacted by an individual who, leading up to those last days of the station being opened in 1988, was in contact with employees of the railroad that had been ordered just to clear materials out. And as often happens with company records, employees are not wanting to throw them away. They just took the materials out and saved them. They got passed from one place to the other and became overwhelming. And we were contacted, unfortunately, maybe a little too late because a lot of them were in bad condition. But we were able to salvage a large portion of the as-built architectural drawings of the station. If you know anything about architecture, it's a little bit different to get the as-builts than presentation copies. I know that there's copies of the original elevations at the Burton Historical Collection at the Detroit Public Library, but these are the drawings that would be in the building and used by facilities staff and are just an incredible trove of information about the inner workings of that structure. So do I think it's going to happen? I hope so. Can it? I think we have the records to enable that.
Well, I'll tell you what, as just someone who, as I said, remembers it as it was a wonderfully vibrant building when I was a kid, and then remembering that final train, hard to believe it's been 30 years. And certainly, I think all of us can agree in our lifetimes, we would sure like to see that building come back to life again. Dan Austin with HistoricDetroit.org, Mark Harvey, Michigan History Center. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for arts and culture coverage comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.